Hello, and welcome to our podcast where we speak the truth about abuse. I am your host, Rochelle, and one of the things I am passionate about is meeting people and hearing their stories. This podcast puts survivors' own experiences in the forefront. Hopefully, this will bring a better understanding of the impact of domestic violence in our community. Hello, everyone, and welcome to our podcast. I'm Rochelle, and today I'm sitting down with Jennifer. I am so excited to have her here with me. We are going to be talking about an aspect of domestic violence relationships that often doesn't get brought up, but we think is really important, and that is living free from abuse, living an abuse-free lifestyle, and what that has meant for us. And we're going to even talk about how long it's been since we got out of our abusive relationships. Jennifer, I just want to say welcome.
Hi, I'm so happy to talk about this today.
I'm so happy to have you here. This is so good. We're going to have a good time today. Jennifer, you've been part of our group for close to a year. And one of the things that you talked about when we would do our check-ins at our peer support group was how long it had been since you got out of your domestic violence relationship. And you would talk about, sometimes you say, living this abuse-free life. And that is just so beautiful. And I was wondering if you could first just maybe talk about how long it has been since you got out of your relationship. And then maybe if you'd like to spend a little time talking about the dynamics of what that looked like, because I know that there were some ways in which your abuser used social media and other means to communicate that to your friends and family, and you had no control over that. So yeah, whatever you'd like to talk about, that would be great.
I have been out of abuse for 2 years. When I started coming to SCARS, I did it as a maintenance plan. So I thought, I'm just going to do this. It was suggested to me by someone who walked every day, every week, every month of me getting out. And so she walked along and she suggested SCARS. And so I thought, okay, this will be my maintenance plan. It'll be part of, I'm going to show up and that's it. And I did not realize that it would be such a profound, you know, component to this side of abuse, for sure. And so when I started talking about, you know, that I was a year or, you know, now 2 years, how many months or however I would put it at group, I was doing it really for myself because I'd had over 35 years of abuse cycle. And so it's all I knew. And so at any time, I knew that I could easily go back. You know, there was like such a hunger to go back. But by being with SCARS and showing up and, of course, all the things that come with that, because it wasn't just I show up at all, for sure. I began to see that life on the other side is actually beautiful. And I could never see it like that before. And so really, I started doing it for myself. Like, okay, now I'm a year, now I'm 2 years. And it was giving me those, you know, kind of measurements, I guess, so that I did not go back, because my story is I would, because that's what I had proven. That's all I knew, 35 plus years of going back or finding a new one.
You know, when you say that on the other side, there was this beautiful life, it's just, it's so true. And talking about that, you didn't know that that was there and that was available for you. And like you said, you didn't just show up to group. There was so much more, and other groups that you've been part of, and, you know, and other work that you have done, but this beautiful life. So if you do feel comfortable and want to go into a little bit about what that was like.
My last abuser, unfortunately, you know, he was an entertainer. And so social media was such a part of his life. I mean, I can remember, and understandably, right? You've got people that you need to, like, understand that. Like, you've got to keep your, you know, fans. But I can just remember, like, going to events, and it's like, can we just enjoy this event and not have to take a picture, post it on social media? And so our love story that was really quite amazing, obviously all the signs are there of domestic violence, but it was all played out on, you know, social media. And so when he decided to file for divorce, you know, even before our first wedding anniversary, he put that on social media. The thing about Facebook is it then goes to Instagram and Twitter, at least his account. And so something that I didn't even know, you know, that afternoon he had come home and said, you know, I filed for divorce. And then while I'm at work, I don't realize that it's gone on Facebook at all. My family's finding out. And for me, I shared this with you, Rochelle, that it did a couple things. For the first time in my life, I was so relieved because I didn't have to hold the secret anymore of what was going on in my marriage behind, you know, the great photos and everything, you know, because he was posting all these great things, but, you know, really he was being an abuser. And so that was really, like, I just remember being so calm, and everyone else was so crazy about it. And I was like, it just felt nice that the secret was out. Of course, I had to do damage control because my family was like, what is going on? You know, he eventually did take it down. But, and then the other part was, you know, people kept telling me, you have to take care of this, Jennifer. And I was like, no, I don't. Like, those are his actions. Like, you know, I don't have to do anything about it. Like, he did that. So it took me a long time to be a part of Facebook, you know, because it just caused, and I was a very private person. And so I felt, in a sense, like, you know, I didn't get to do my, I just felt so exposed. I literally felt like, you know, if you jumped into a pool and your swimsuit fell off, that is how exposed I felt. And then, of course, because you don't tell anybody that anything's going on, then you get that backflip too. Like, why didn't you tell us? And we had no idea.
So I can really relate to what you're saying, Jennifer, especially about when you said people were disappointed because my abuser and I were both in ministry at our church. And I remember when this came out, of course, like you, it wasn't something that I was saying. And so when I finally did get up the courage to, you know, leave, I wasn't really doing it in a way that was, so I have an announcement to make, and I'm just going to be able to articulate so clearly what has happened to me and what is going on. No, I didn't have the words for it. I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't know who I could trust. I didn't know who was going to be talking to him, but I was definitely told by the church, basically, you know, well, this is a disappointment because, you know, you both acted and looked a certain way. And, you know, now I believe it was, you know, you're making us look bad.
For sure.
And then the part about feeling so exposed, I can really relate to that. Thanks for sharing that, because I think that's a lot of that is really common with survivors, you know, no matter, for me, it was a church situation, for you, it was the entertainment industry. And I feel like, you know, no matter people's backgrounds, that's a common thing. I also remember that someone said, when you said people would be like, well, why didn't you tell us? I think I remember trying to talk to one pastor that I did trust, but later he said, you know, you always talk in riddles. I can't understand what you're saying.
And I remember that, Rochelle, very well, when people would say, I remember later on, I could say to them, you're struggling with it now. Can you only imagine if I had told you then? You would never have believed it because you can barely believe it now. Because you're sending me messages that say, is this really true, Jennifer? Yeah, it is. And I remember it causing, it's like a bomb went off. Like, not only are you exposed, but there was so much division. You know, my friends, you know, who were in my wedding are having to decide, do we unfriend this? Like, we're blocking this person because why would you do that? And we love you. And then I remember, I had an uncle that started, you know, defending his favorite niece, you know, and having to go to them and saying, this is not who we are going to be on Facebook. Please do not. Some people listen, some people didn't, and you can't. So it just creates this, literally an atomic bomb on social media. It took me a while to walk into a room and not feel like everybody knew everything about me.
And even off of social media, you know, I'm thinking about my faith community at the time and my limited friend community that I had because, you know, I'd been so isolated. But, you know, it is like a bomb goes off and people are, do I take sides? Do I defend? You know, what do I do? And what did that also look like even in your real life community for you?
Unfortunately, if the abuse wasn't enough, but there was also addiction. We had both of those things. And so one was plenty. When I made that decision, you know, we did an intervention and he did not choose at that time, you know, to get better, to take the time to get better. And so I had, and then to take the stand for the abuse. I remember the professional said, we are sorry because when you leave, you will be blamed and it will look like, you know, it's your fault and all of those things. If you stay, you are allowing and you're showing that addiction and abuse is okay. And so I remember, you know, that was helpful because, you know, I remember when I came back, you know, to where I grew up and I'm at a family dinner and one of my siblings is like, well, you are the one that left, Jen, at a family dinner, you know, and you're just like, okay, you know, and you really want to punch them in the face, but violence is never the answer. So you can't do that. But you're looking at them and you're like, from what you've seen on social media and from your perspective, you're right. I did leave. But I always told people, I would always tell them this statement. I will never regret for the rest of my life choosing myself and not settling with Satan in my living room. It did. But it was hard. Rochelle, I won't lie. It was hard. Because I was blamed by my own family, by my, you know, in-laws, anybody that you knew that you were that person that was blamed.
And Jennifer, you've talked about, you alluded to it before, but you've talked about how that pull to, you know, be in relationship, be back in relationship with this person.
When I came back, some friends insisted that I lived with them. Well, you know, I was like, no, like, I'm not going to do that. But I now see that it was key into my healing. Because I remember when like six roses showed up on the doorstep and I had been living with them, you know, probably about 6 months. And so they showed up and we know where they're from, right? They're from the former abuser. And so the card says, each rose represents every month that we've been apart. First of all, you don't need to remind me of how many months it's been. Like, I know, right? And I remember my roommates that I was living with, they said, I said, I'm going to give you these flowers. And they said, you don't want to keep them, Jennifer. And I said, no, because when I look at these flowers, all I'm remembering is the good things. And if I don't remember what the card is saying, you know, what that behavior is saying, I'm going to go back. And so I'm going to give you these flowers. So here's some flowers. And then they left them on the table for a few days. And then they went into the garbage. You know, that was just one example, but it's, you know, I would go sometimes on practice, you know, just, I don't know if you call them practice dates or whatever they were, but I would go on them and, you know, I would just meet them at the restaurant and I would experience what it was like to go to dinner with somebody who let me order first or that didn't take up so much of the air in the dinner. And then I would just, you know, get in my car, go home. And I can remember I would drive home. And even in that amazing experience, there would be this like feeling of, I wish I was having dinner with him, not this person that I'm who's so healthy, you know, and that especially the first year. Yeah, I think eventually, you know, it will get less and less. You know, it's only been a couple of years. But I think by showing up to the support groups with scars and, you know, the speaking for the perpetrators, writing for the blog, but when I'm rereading my story that once was, I really think that, again, like we said before, it shows you this beautiful life, even like Rochelle, when you talk about what your life looks like now. So it shows me. And what that does is I think it's almost like this antidote. It's like a medicine, maybe a new way, so that when that pull comes, it doesn't come as often now. And when it comes, I don't keep it going as long as in the past.
You know, Jennifer, that makes me think about something that you were talking about, even after those nice dinners where you were treated in a way that was respectful and in a way that, you know, was just healthy, that you still would think later about your ex. And it makes me think about, so often as survivors, we talk and say, you know, it's not so much about not wanting to be with them as a person, especially first, but that we just wanted their abuse to stop.
Yes.
Thoughts about that?
Yes. And I think even though I had this amazing time, the abuse is all I ever know or all I ever knew. That eventually this nice dinner, you know, plates are going to get thrown or I'm going to be diminished at it. And so it's like I'm experiencing this new beautiful way. But I haven't quite experienced it enough. And so back then it was still like one step forward, two steps back, one nice dinner, now two thoughts. And then I'd go on into the night like so missing him, even though the dinner was never great like that. Yeah, we just want the abuse to stop. I remember when I would do like monologues in the living room, like just begging, like, that you, like, it doesn't have to be this way. And now I look back and I think about that and it's like, I just wanted the abuse to stop. And I think part of that pull, that missing them, you know, I have this great dinner and then I'm missing them. Or I think too, it's just this dream that we had, it didn't succeed. And so I think it's part of that too.
You've talked about how it's closer to 2 years now. And does it still happen that you get roses or gifts from this person? And if so, how does it impact you now differently than it used to?
Sometimes we do have to kind of own in the healing process. And so get, you know, those roses were not the end of it. Like money came, which there's a side sometimes with the money, because he was not financially fair and there was financial abuse. And so I will tell you that when the first check shows up, the fact that this person who made sure that you were not going to get one dime is sending you money, you start to think, oh, they must be remorseful. They're that kind of thing. And so you want to take it. But here's what good counsel reminded me. If you continue to take it, it's a hook and it will continue to send that subliminal message, because abusers always have that hope that they will get back with you. And so I really had to learn to follow through on my boundaries. I wasn't good at that. I was good at boundaries. No, stop it. Don't do that. But I wasn't good at the follow through. Hence, went back. And so I had to say, no more gifts, no more money, no more nothing. If they came, I had to then decide, do I send it back? Do I donate it? What do I do? You know, I am happy to say, because I'm learning about the restorative justice, I'm learning about abusers can learn other ways. I'm happy to report that I have not gotten any more money, any more gifts, any more things. Does the poll still happen? Yes, it does. But what's different now is, now, the boundary wasn't, he can't ever contact me. But if he does, like, I really miss you or this or that. What I notice now, and this just happened this week, so I love this question. Just this week, it's like, oh man, here it comes again. But now what I'm more focusing on when it comes is, I want the beautiful. I want that life that's not filled with the abuse. I just, you know, I have those tools in place, like, to figure out whether it's I reach out to someone, whether it's, I go to no more contact again, you know, all those things, try to show up, you know, to a support group, but it gets easier, you know, it may still be there, but I think I'm at that place now where I want the beautiful so bad that I will do whatever I have to do to make that happen instead of the ugly.
It even inspires me to be thinking about living this beautiful abuse-free life. And that's really what it is, right? Is just thinking about how life can be living free from abuse. And for so many of us, that are survivors, we didn't have that. And maybe it was in our upbringing. Maybe it was in a, you know, intimate partner relationship. Maybe it was a family member. And living with abuse has such a profound impact on every aspect of our life, our day-to-day life, how we talk to ourselves about ourselves, what we believe for ourselves. Jennifer and I, we checked in before we started recording this podcast. And Jennifer and I were talking about, you know, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And that's so often what survivors feel like, is even when beautiful things would come to us, we wouldn't believe it or be able to be present in it because we were just worried about when the bad thing was going to happen. And this idea of, okay, so living free from abuse means that I don't have to always look over my shoulder or look around the corner or wonder when the other shoe is going to drop.
Yes, because in your story, you know, you were with that person for a long, long, long time. And in my story, I had more than one abuser. So when I say to you, I have never had a marriage or a boyfriend, an intimate relationship that was not filled with abuse. And so you're right. It's like, if you've never had that success, you don't know what it's like. But I really see now that it is possible. And people are doing it. And they are being successful, and it can happen for sure.
I think this is such an important topic that we've been talking about today. You know, living a life free from abuse, but the truths of what that really looks like and how there can be a pull to go back and what we can do as survivors to take care of ourselves. And like you said, not only to have and practice healthy boundaries, but to also enforce them. And so I just want to thank you for your time today. And if there's anything else that you would like to say in wrapping up.
Thank you for, you know, making another podcast so delightful. And I think just creating scars, because what I thought was just showing up, just maintaining so that I didn't go back, it helped me, you know, it's just really helped me see and be a key part of why I'm not going back. And it's helping me build that foundation that I need for me. And so I can stay in this beautiful aspect, you know, of life.
And I am just so grateful that you are part of our survivor group, and you are also what helps make us so amazing, right? It's all of us together, which means that we are all individually so amazing. And so thank you again for coming today, Jennifer. And thank you all for listening today. This wraps up another episode. So we will see you next time.